time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Northwestern's actions here suggest they just caved. Not that they really are, they really think something happened here. And if I'm wrong, come on out and tell me. Show me the report.
Ross Dellinger.
This just reeks of serious desperation in some way. Like, you know, it reeks of somebody's in the hole. That's what it reeks of.
And SI's Pat 40.
Well, we're not going to talk about the car thing that's just been an absolute disaster, but look over here where the AJC's been unfair to us.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
Welcome to the pod, and Pat Fitzgerald got. See that one coming. We taped early Monday. He got fired late Monday. Again, quite a remarkable turn of events. We had been taping last week's pod and said Pat Fitzgerald was fired. It would be a stunner. Start with you, Ross. What are your thoughts on what transpired since the last taping? Any of it surprise you, or what are you hearing out there?
Well, yeah, I mean, I didn't think that Pat Fitzgerald would be fired for a number of reasons, but mainly because the university, after this investigation, gave him a 2-week suspension. And then a few days later, when the details of the investigation and of the report came to light, then kind of right changed their mind and stiffened the penalty significantly by firing him. And honestly, I would think, based on all that, that Pat Fitzgerald probably has a good chance to get a lot of the money that he is owed, which is over, I believe, $40 million from Northwestern in buyout money because of the initial decision that they made. I was talking to a lawyer who dabbles in college athletics, and he was saying that he would expect Pat Fitzgerald to win this lawsuit based on the fact that the university came up with one decision, and then a few days later, probably, you know, really only after the details of the investigation and the report came out, made another decision. And it goes back to what we talked about on the pod earlier this week, right? It's like, release the report. Originally, you should have released the report, all the details, have all the media comb through it, and give the punishment then, and address all of the issues. And instead, they didn't do that, and now they're probably gonna owe him millions of dollars eventually.
Yeah, it's a pretty stunning just acceleration of this thing, you know. From first of all, not many people knew it was going on, to then a vague release with a fairly light punishment. And then, boom, student newspaper threw gasoline on this thing, and the bonfire took down a lifer. I mean, Pat Fitzgerald, you know, he was only 48 years old. He could have coached 20 more years if he wanted to at Northwestern. I don't think that, you know, even after the two bad seasons he had, I don't think there was anybody sitting around saying, we got to get rid of Pat Fitzgerald. Maybe a few people, but I didn't get the sense that he was on a true scorching hot seat or anything. And so for it to go from 0 to 60 like this one did was pretty stunning, and take down a guy who is more woven into his football program than just about anybody in the country, like maybe Kirk Ferentz. But Kirk Ferentz, to the best of my recollection, like, wasn't a star player where Fitzgerald was at that school. You know, I mean, he was a first-team All-American, defensive player of the year in the Big Ten when they went to the Rose Bowl. So, you know, it is a wild fall from grace. And I did wrote a little bit, it does echo a little what happened to his mentor and his coach, Gary Barnett, at Colorado, where things started, you know, he had an entrenched way of doing things and I think fought resisted change. And I think Pat Fitzgerald's probably has been that way to a degree at Northwestern. You know, sometimes you get too entrenched. Everybody, we've said on this podcast before, everybody needs a boss. And I'm not sure Pat Fitzgerald had a boss in the latter years there at Northwestern.
So a couple things on that. First off, to Ross's point, I agree. I think they're going to settle this pretty quickly because Northwestern doesn't want to get into what exactly changed your – they do not want to get into the thought process of why did we change from Friday to Monday. I mean, that remains the biggest thing. Even if you agree that they got to the right spot, if Pat Fitzgerald had to go, how in the world did the president of the school – presumably the AD, the board of trustees, a whole host of lawyers read this comprehensive report and say 2 week notice, 2 weeks and knock it off. We'll make sure there's no more hazing. Two, the complainant speaks and makes the allegations public, the same allegations that would almost certainly be in this report. And in the original, I think Adam Rittenberg, ESPN, had the original complaint, which had all the same stuff. And that changed your opinion to where you got to go. Like, there's a lot of room between 2 week suspension in the middle of summer, you know, unpaid, who cares? This guy's made, you know, so much money. And you're fired. What in the world happened, right? I'm going to get to my theory on what happened. But Pat's point, Barnett, you know, that mid-90s Northwestern team was like this, you know, it's this wonderful story of the plucky underdog, and they had lost so many years in a row, and they beat Notre Dame and Michigan and Penn State. They go to the Rose Bowl. It's, you know, the greatest story, and it really was a fun story. But it wasn't like the lovable losers just started winning. It was Gary Barnett brought big-time football to Northwestern.
Yeah.
And all that comes with that. You know, this wasn't a Disney movie where it's like the you know, the kid with the corn rim glasses finally hits the home run with his eyes closed, or, you know, Bad News Bears. It was that he brought in a whole bunch of Kelly Leaks and they're riding their motorbikes around and all that. So, you know, there's that. So, you know, to that, I think there is a little bit on that. I was on a radio show and I can't remember who brought it up, and I apologize, but they were talking about it, and they kind of likened it to when, if you remember the Ray Rice deal in the NFL like went lightly. I can't remember the original punishment on Ray Rice when he hit his girlfriend at the Atlantic City casino, and they had all the information, and then somebody leaked the video. Someone, a security guard, took a video of the tape and put it on TMZ. Got paid by TMZ. And we saw Ray Rice hit his girlfriend.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, the NFL took it seriously. And Ray Rice, you know, so it was like, but you had the information. And if you're running the NFL or you're running Northwestern, you should not need to speak directly to a victim to hear the emotion or the pain. You should be learned enough, experienced enough, seasoned enough, caring enough, I don't know what, to read a report and say, oh, I understand that there is some trauma here with what this guy went through. And you shouldn't need to say, oh, wait a minute. Now it's in the Daily Northwestern. It's on the rival site of Northwestern's rival site, or, you know, I should call this guy. And then all of a sudden, okay, that's it. You're fired. You know, this is just so, even if you think they got to the right spot in the end, this just, again, was just so mismanaged. They either blew it on Friday or they blew it on Monday.
Yeah.
So, which one is it? Go ahead, Pat.
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. This is a complete failure of managing a crisis situation, of proper, transparent communication, everything. I mean, even when they fired Fitz, so reportedly, like the AD was on vacation. and had been on vacation the entire time. This is a four-day fiasco. The place is burning to the ground. AD's on vacation. I don't think President Schill, had showed up in front of anybody at any point in time. So it was like just this bizarre absentee leadership in a major crisis. And again, smart, well-paid people who, for some reason, first of all, don't think that you can just hide stuff and everything's going to be okay. And then secondly, you got to stand up in front of people in these times and make decisions. It's just wild that we end up in these spots.
I'm not, I'm certainly not like making excuses for the AD, but could you imagine, I think it's Derek Gregg is the AD there, but you can imagine like they put out, they had this whole plan thing, right, to put out this statement whenever, I'll be a week, roughly a week ago, that he's suspended for 2 weeks. And then everybody went on their literally merry way in a overseas on vacation. I think the president too was out for a few days, didn't show up. And then all hell breaks loose while they're on vacation after putting it. They probably thought they'd washed their hands of all this stuff. And it just goes to show you, just release the whole thing, guys. Just release the whole thing. And now I saw, I think ESPN, Adam Rittenberg reported, he's done a good job with all this, is that, that a couple of, or maybe six faculty members at Northwestern petitioned or sent a letter to the president requesting for him to release the whole report. And I'm assuming we're going to continue to have more of that. But, you know, to one of the things Dan said on the previous pod, I think, is Pat Fitzgerald was so respected, especially by people in his industry. You know, it was kind of, I think I saw Dan Wetzel write, like, or Dan Wetzel, Dan Walken write that, that
Wetzel, sorry, <Lucy. laughs>
that Pat Fitzgerald was thought of among the coaching community as someone who you would send your son to play for and feel good about it. I got a call Tuesday morning from a coach who obviously is close to Pat Fitzgerald, and he was just beside himself, right? He was just, you know, raising his voice in pretty angry. And I think you're seeing that from the coaching community, like this coach said something like, why would we even want to do this anymore? I mean, you know, if somebody like this can get quote canceled, you know, why are we here in it? But, you know, and that's obviously one vantage point. I think that, all coaches
payday.
Should,
yeah, yeah, all coaches $5.27 million dollars a year. That's right.
a pretty good reason. Yeah.
But I think all coaches should understand, like, you know, you got to keep a pulse on what's happening in your locker room. And one of the conversations I was having with this coach who called was the locker room conduct. And he brought up some really interesting points. You know, he said things like, could you imagine if an academic were to spend a few hours in a college football locker room? He or she would be beside himself in a gasp of the things they saw, like, boys will be boys. This is what happens in a locker room. This is why the locker room's sacred. And like, I understand all that, but these days, like, this isn't 1998 anymore. And you just can't do some of those things. And those things can't be naked men walking in and out and humping each other and whatever else in the shower. Like, just can't be done.
No, they need to be proactive in the way they're proactive with, and they weren't 30 years ago, in how we handle alcohol, how we deal when we're pulled over by the police, how we treat women, sexual assault, all the different things. They bring people in to talk to the players now.
Yeah.
Because you can't just be like, hey guys, make good decisions this weekend, because you don't want anything bad to happen. And B, it's your job. Your career is on the line with 100 kids going out on Saturday night. So you're going to do everything you can. Sensitivity training, all the stuff. Same way every corporation does that stuff.
Yep.
So, you know, they have to do that with locker room hazing, and be aggressive on that.
Yeah.
Do you have something? Go ahead, Pat, if you have something.
Just real quick, in terms of Pat Fitzgerald's stature and regard, and I do think he is well thought of in the generally in the coaching community. I had a similar call, Ross, with another coach who said he's not necessarily a big Pat Fitzgerald fan, but knows the way he runs his program. So that guy, if he's getting run out, man, wow. And then I've also heard, look, already there are people out there with their eye on Fitzgerald in the NFL level, and I assume there will be on the college level as well.
Yeah. My guess is the story might break better for Pat Fitzgerald the more info comes out. And that's why that report, I still don't know what do we hide? There's a chance the report is worse for Pat Fitzgerald, but if so, that makes it worse for Northwestern, because how did all of these people look at the report and say 2 weeks?
Right.
Now, to me, and this isn't saying that Pat Fitzgerald shouldn't have been fired, but what I'm saying is Northwestern has exhibited nothing other than, to me, a convincing argument that they've decided to fire Pat Fitzgerald because they were reacting to what they perceived to be public pressure.
Mm-hmm.
They did not make this based on anything other than they got scared. They got spooked by this story. They thought they could bury it. They couldn't. They got a 7-month investigation with 50 plus interviews, all the stuff in the world. And again, this was not just the president. You know, the trustees were involved. You know, there were a whole teams of lawyers were there. You know, there were other administrators, and they said 2 week suspension. Now, maybe they were caving to boosters at that point and didn't later. I don't know. That's about the only thing. But to me, they made that decision. They said, this is worth 2 weeks. We're going to put in all these things in place. There's not going to be any hazing at Northwestern going forward. Like, this is an easy problem to root out.
Yeah.
I mean, they were going to have a locker room monitor. They were getting rid of Camp Kenosha, all the stuff. And basically, you end the naked part.
Yes. That is one thing we said in the pod on Monday, and I put in my column naked. Too. Yeah. Don't have hazing and naked attached to your program.
Like, there's hazing that, like, at the NFL, if you're an NFL rookie, you know, some teams will make you get up. You have to sing your fight song in front of the whole team, right?
Mm-hmm.
And everyone hoots and hollers. You saw it last year. They did the Lions hard knocks, and Aiden Hutchinson got up and sang Michael Jackson's Billie Jean. It was, you know, became a huge hit on the show. And you go, oh, that, you know, I don't believe that to be very abusive. It's a little nerve wracking. I don't know. Maybe 20 years from now, they'll say that was mental abuse to make a shy person say, I don't know where we're heading. But at this point in society, is not deemed to be abusive if you have to stand up and sing, you know, Carmen, Ohio in front of the guys.
Right.
Do it naked and you go, what the hell is this? A lot of what they had to do there really wasn't a big deal, except they were doing it naked. And it's like, come on. Like, all right. So anyway, these guys have done nothing but convince me that all they cared about was what they thought was going to be the backlash. Because they completely changed their thing once a little bit of the details come out in the paper and on the rival site and on ESPN. They have decided, I mean, how about this? They have decided that all of the assistants and all of the support staff are back.
Yeah.
So this was such egregious, abusive, horrible conduct that Pat Fitzgerald had to be fired. Because not that he knew, he should have known. Okay. Again, I'm not here to say that's the wrong decision. I'm just saying that's their argument. And yet, nobody else should have known. Not one person in Northwestern other than Pat Fitzgerald is responsible for this. No players are being investigated for what they did. No locker room guy, no student assistant, no whatever. Not one person at Northwestern except Pat Fitzgerald. Now, if this is as bad as it was to fire Pat Fitzgerald, then Northwestern should be all over all sorts of people on this staff.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they aren't, because I don't think it was that. I don't think they think it was that bad. I really don't. I don't believe that the trustees and the president and all the people involved in this are sitting there going, if this was as bad as they are pretending or saying, how in the world could you then turn around and go, not bad enough that we got to take anybody else out? I mean, hey, case closed. That to me suggests they don't think it's that bad. But once the word leaked, then they reacted. That's how they, I'm not saying right or wrong, or they're not in the right place. I'm just saying that's how those actions suggest their thinking to me. And that's pretty pathetic if that is the fact. Because this is either a lot of people got to go or
nobody.
2 week suspension.
Yeah. No, I'm with you there that there is a lapse in logic that doesn't make sense. And okay, you can step back and they're going to say, well, we got to have a staff for a football season. Well, I mean, if this is drastic enough that the guy who's been the head coach for 17 years and is the winningest coach in history has to go, you can make a case you need to make a lot of changes then and there. I told you, I mentioned the coach I talked to this week, and he said, look, one of the things that coaches say, like, to the assistants, hey, be in the locker room. Go through the locker room after practice. Talk to your guys. What are they talking about? Find out what's on their minds. So if their assistant coaches were doing that, they probably had a decent idea what's going on. But if you're trying to salvage a 2023 season, you know, and keep a roster intact by keeping most of the rest of the staff intact, there's a bit of a disconnect with saying that you don't need a head coach. You can just, you know, plug in somebody else there.
Yeah, it just reeks of what we've kind of been touching on, is that they just caved to the pressure of the media, kind of the pressure of all these details kind of coming out, and they just kind of caved to the one man who was responsible for everything, or should have known, as Dan mentioned. And so they I guess assume that one firing would relieve that pressure. But obviously, how many coaches on that staff knew about this? I mean, you've got to think several. And
they would have been closer to the players.
Yeah, right.
Right. Position coaches, your young assistants, support staff. And you go, well, these are just assistant coaches. You know how it is, assistant coaches now. These guys are making $1 million a year. They've been there 25. Yeah. Like, these aren't just like, oh, well, okay, yeah, the grad assistant maybe doesn't know what to do. We ain't talking about him. I don't want to see anyone else losing their job if they don't deserve it. I'm just saying Northwestern's actions here suggest they just caved. Not that they really think something happened here. And if I'm wrong, come on out and tell me. Show me the report.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I mean, their original decision to 2 weeks showed you they didn't think it was that big of a deal. But
when they had time,
because
no one was telling them when to release this report. No one, barely anybody knew it was happening.
Right. Yeah.
When they had the cool, calm time, hey, let's sleep on this decision. Let's have a meeting. Let's consult with the lawyers. Let's consult again. Let's test 2 weeks. Oh my God! Something got printed on a website, student paper website. I might have screwed it up. It's like they scanned Twitter and was like, "Well, that's it."
Yeah.
So maybe they got the right in the end. Maybe they did. I'm just saying they caved. They caved. Yeah. That's a scary place to work. And that I'm guessing they do not want that coming out in their lawsuit on how much they're paying Pat Fitzgerald.
Yeah. I mean, look, this does smack of a private university trying to keep things as private as possible because they can, from an open record standpoint. Like, hey, we don't have to release this stuff, and so we're not going to. And
well, it's going to get out.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody probably has it who's going to end up giving it to somebody.
Or if they're going to have a lawsuit, and, you know, they're either paying Pat Fitzgerald about heck of a lot of that $40 million, or it's coming out.
Right.
So it's coming out. I don't know. All right, let's get on to another story. I just briefly. I mean, it's a one-win team. They're probably going to have some people leave. Interim coach, you think, this year, and then wait, or should they try to hire somebody?
No, they're interim.
They got to go win, right? They don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Sort through the rubble. They weren't expected to do anything anyway. This program's got a lot of challenges going forward.
It does.
And, you know, it had a lot when Pat Fitzgerald was there. And they won 4 games the last 2 years. This is so... sorry, Northwestern fans, I'm going to spend too much time on the future of your program. We'll get to you later. I should have done this at the beginning, although it pretty much speaks to our disorganization. The next Monday, we have finalized our plans for next Monday in Nashville.
Yep.
Now, we were supposed to do all sorts of fancy things. We did none of those. There's no planning.
Shocking.
There's no show. There's no micro. This isn't even like a Q&A. There's no little like promotional light. There's nothing.
It's just really drinking, is it?
There's three of us and there's a bar. That's right. What we got.
Yeah, there you go.
Monday night, 7 p.m. Tootsie's Orchard. I don't even know the name of the bar. Tootsie's on Broadway, downtown Nashville. It's a 60-year-old honky-tonk. I'm a little nervous. We're going to get some, you know, Luke Bryant wannabe blaring in the corner. But I can't find much of a sports bar in downtown Nashville. Everybody plays music. The whole town is built for bachelorette parties. I understand. They make a lot more money off of that than whatever sorry-ass crowd we're dragging in on a Monday night in July. But that's it. Tootsie's, yep. Broadway, 7 o'clock. We will be there. Pete Dammel says he might be there. He says he's going to be there. Oh. We'll see. Got the whole royalty.
Yeah.
The family
current
tree.
And former podcast members.
Pat, Ross, and I will be there. Just come and say hello. We have no show. That's it. We're just telling you where we're going to be. Hopefully none of you want to come and stab us. Okay, so we'll bring armed security.
TBD on that. TBD.
TBD. No, come on down, hang out, talk to us, share some laughs, have a few drinks. Don't drink. Whatever you want to do. That's where we're going to be. 7 o'clock at Tootsie's on Monday night in Nashville.
We had somebody bring us a painting one time when we did a live show. You don't have to do that. Nobody has to bring us a painting.
No, don't bring us gifts. We will accept drinks, but that's it. So totally lame meetup.
Yes. It can't be that lame on Broadway in Nashville.
Come
on.
No. But yes, the only concern, is that every place you go into in Nashville, there is blaring live music. So we'll deal with it, though. As
you know, Taylor Swift started in these things. Yeah, okay. Well, she's Taylor Swift, and you're not. Go back to high school, honey. Study. Take your ACT, kid. Take your ACT. Yeah. All right. Also, Sunday, Detroit Book Fair. Eastern Market, come on down. My personal appearance for anyone in Detroit or the greater metropolitan region, come on down and say hello. That could be a disaster also in my book selling efforts. So I'm going to need some moral support. So, they got a lot of books and there's memorabilia. I don't know what they do now. It's a scene. It's a scene. So we got that. That's starts at 10 a.m. And we'll go till I'm tired of trying to sell books. So we got a lot of opportunities here. If you want to meet me and meet the crew, I don't know. Anyway, that's that. Okay. Huggins, we're re-racking our two topics from last week, and we're going to get to Georgia. We got other stuff. We got to get through this a lot. Yeah. Just briefly, Huggins is still saying he didn't resign. And Ross brought up the Seinfeld episode where Costanza quit. He was working in an office. He was not. And this is a Larry David wrote the episode. I actually looked this up. The stuff I will do research on. And Costanza was denied access to using the executive bathroom. And he was so offended that he yelled at his boss and quit. And then he got home, and he and Jerry realized he had needed the job and had no real employment opportunities because he's George Costanza. And so then they hatched the plan of just returning like nothing happened. I think we have a rare drop. This is how much prep we did. Some prep. Play the drop. That. Play the drop.
Didn't you quit?
You took that seriously.
No, to do the start of it. Okay, whatever.
Yeah.
All right. Good enough. Huggins. I can't even believe this story. Like, in the annals of absurd college basketball stories, I don't know if there's a better fired story since Jerry Tarkanian got fired, even though he was somehow had made himself a tenured professor at UNLV. Like, you can't get fired as a tenured professor, yet when your players are in a hot tub drinking beer with a guy named the Fixer.
Richard the Fixer, so, yeah. Perry.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Somebody on Twitter was mocking me for all my and all the guys I like in college basketball. Not a good judge of character. I'm not saying that.
If you were, you wouldn't be on the show with us.
Hugs media statement. The press has now seen the letter sent by my counsel setting forth my position that I never resigned from my employment as head basketball coach for West Virginia University. My attorney will address the legal arguments. Initially, let me say I'm truly sorry for the mistake I made in Pittsburgh. At least he knows he was in Pittsburgh now.
Yeah, didn't then.
I've taken responsibility for the mistake and taken course to rectify such a mistake will not occur in the future. A voluntary check into a world-class rehab center. Tend to remain in the center until I am cleared. Due to my focus on rehabilitation, I have not been in the media responding to WVU statements about the incident. I now understand that WVU published a statement purportedly written by me at 10:20 p.m. on June 17th. The statement provides, today I submitted a letter to President Gordon Gee and Director whatever, blah, 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 saying, informing them of my resignation and intention to retire as head coach of the West Virginia University. Effective immediately. I did not draft or review WVU statement. This false statement was sent under my name, but no signature included. In addition, the false unsigned statement was accompanied by a joint statement from the president and director of athletics. He goes on about his employment agreement and then says, it is clear that WVU did not handle the situation appropriately. More importantly, the basketball program is in need, and I have a strong desire to conclude my career as the head coach for the program that I love. I hope to meet with WVU in the near future to resolve the situation. He basically says, like, they didn't give him time to sort out his legal problems and talk to him. I don't know. So there's a letter writing campaign back and forth. Huggins also has like 16 attorneys. So West Virginia sends back this letter to one of Huggins' attorneys. And it is just they talk about. They go through all the litany of things that happened, right? On what happened. Like we talked about the other day, Huggins's wife, June, sent the deputy athletic director an email because Bob doesn't use email. And WVU had talked to the attorney saying, you don't have to send us a registered letter. Just send us an email. So June Huggins sends an email that reads, please accept this correspondence as my future notice of resignation as WVU, as my formal notice of resignation as WVU head basketball coach and notice of my retirement from West Virginia University effective immediately. Play me a Costanza.
You quit.
You took that seriously.
Okay. Or maybe when Huggins met with the basketball staff and team and according to the university to, quote, there's many witnesses, of course, to this meeting,
yeah.
Announced that he would no longer be coaching the team and specifically told the team he was resigning. Or perhaps it was the next morning after that meeting, he shows up at the offices, meets with Ren Baker, the AD. They discuss the resignation and retirement. And then Huggins cleans out his office.
You took
another
that
strong
seriously.
Indication. Another culminating strong indication in quote, that he did actually quit.
Mr. Huggins loading boxes from his office into his truck, and then he drove away.
You took that seriously.
Pat, People's Court here. Coach Hugs, my man, I love you, but what up? Or WVU, whose side you got?
Well, to paraphrase the lyrical stylings of Motley Crue, Hugs, don't go away mad. Hugs, just go away.
Oh, man.
Like, just stop it. Go away. I am so tired of Bob Huggins at this point. He has just absolutely torched any goodwill that he could have had. And this is all just like, this is so just nakedly, nonsensically desperate and greedy. I it's just, it's gross. So like, I am way over Bob Huggins. Somebody who, until early May, you know, I held in fairly high regard. And now it's just like, man, after the radio episode, after the DUI, and now after this just ridiculous, obnoxious power grab, go away, Bob. We're done.
And he's got, like Dan mentioned, he got like 16 lawyers. Are any of them giving him good legal advice? Because it doesn't seem like it. I don't know how you could have surrounded by so many attorneys and they're thinking that this is a good idea or that it's going to be successful
billable hours
in any way. Yeah. Well, there you go. Right. Yeah. They might know it, but they like the cash. I was talking to somebody, I think Monday or so, and it was another attorney that deals with college athletics stuff quite a bit. And I kind of said to him, like, are they just going to pretend like this, you know, his wife didn't send this resignation email? And the person said, well, I mean, he didn't send the email. His wife did, you know. I'm thinking, oh, really? You know, really? But as there's a litany of things, obviously, that we went through, right, that he cleaned there's out his office. Too. He met with Ren Baker. I mean, it's just, it's all bizarre. And I can't imagine that this is fruitful in any way for him.
I hope he drops this and just says, I don't know, the stress of rehab. Look, I mean, he could conceivably coach somewhere again. He could coach high school again. Like, he could. The program needs all the help it can get. You're undermining your current coach. You're just, you're not going to win. This is embarrassing. Huggins, a
undermining
proud guy.
Undermining your current coach, who was your longtime assistant.
Yeah, like, 16 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he kind of puts in there, there's a line in the letter that he says about how he wanted to, if I was not their coach, I was hoping that I would be replaced by a coach that I recommended to WVU. I met with my players on June 3rd, 17th and let them know the truth, that I did not know what would happen to me, but that if I was not their coach, I was hoping I would be replaced by a coach that I recommended to WVU. Why mention that?
Right.
Unless you don't recommend. Like, you know, it's just, look, Huggins goes through rehab and hangs around the program. He can sit up in the stands like, you know, Roy Williams. His first trip back to, you know, stay away for a little bit and then maybe show up at the Kansas game and the place is going crazy for him. And like, this is just like, I think these coaches get lost, and Fitzgerald might have been the same way. Like, they just get lost in their own. Like, I just cannot imagine the rank and file guy out in West Virginia who's like, dude, I'm going down in the coal mine, or I'm working at this hospital, or I'm doing whatever, is like, oh yeah, man, Hugs really got screwed. He better make sure we get him his $4 million.
Mm. Yeah.
I think they get lost. I'm getting mistreated. Like, yeah. College basketball afforded you an incredible life. And, I mean, it's not that if he had just said, I'm having alcohol issues, I need to go trek into rehab, then they can't fire you. But he got arrested.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Again, after saying something incredibly insensitive publicly.
Yeah, it's just cumulative effect.
And previously being arrested for DUI. And,
a lot of strikes.
Yeah. All right. Georgia, two prongs here. Georgia, Kirby Smart and a bunch of officials had a press conference. We will start with the they pushed back on a lot of the some of the AJC reporting, particularly on their tolerance for sexual assault. It was pretty interesting. They believe that some of the reporting in the AJC was let's use the, let me see what the term is, false accusation. Smart said, I can handle a lot of talk, but I cannot, will not tolerate these false accusations. This program or this university condones sexual misconduct. No tolerance for sexual misconduct or abuse. Never have, never will. We have that. We have a protocol in place. We address allegations swiftly and quickly. The two examples cited in recent reports illustrated our suspension policy. They never played another game at Georgia. How is that to be contorted as supportive of bad behavior? So they really pushed back. It involved suspension of Trey Bishop for felony eavesdropping and surveillance, and the arrest of wide receiver J.J. Holman for assault, and a 2022 linebacker Adam Anderson for alleged rape. They were all mentioned prominently in the story. And so they really pushed back on that. And that is fair. We're not the AJC. They can respond as they would like. I certainly have no doubt that Kirby Smart or anyone at Georgia does not want these things to happen. Now, to the cars. I don't know. Anyone have a thought on that? But
no, let's get to the cars. Go ahead.
The cars.
Yeah.
Kirby Smart says he there has been 11, I think it was 11 in there, different excessive speed citations in the program since the January 15th accident that killed lineman Devin Willock and staff member Chandler LaCroix. LaCroix was had a DUI, and then it was also injured a couple other, another staffer and a player. Jalen Carter was on the scene. LaCroix was going over 100 miles an hour when with a 1.197 blood alcohol level and slammed into power poles and trees. Since then, there has been they just cannot get the kids to stop speeding. I don't know what the world would scare them and more, but it's dangerous to the people of Athens. This had a freshman linebacker getting 88 miles an hour and a 55. The citation occurred 1 hour before another receiver made an appearance in court and pled guilty to going 90 and a 45. Kirby, I'll be the first to admit we haven't solved that issue or problem. I don't honestly know that anybody has. But certainly for us, it's important to acknowledge it first. We've had a lot of intervention in terms of talking and visiting, and discipline measures have been implemented in terms of education. We'll continue to do that. He talks about, I wish I could prevent speeding issues and learn from a horrific and tragic event. Still wrestling that. We talk about it as a staff and all things we can do. We got issues with traffic citations and speeding, and we have to improve on. We have to get better at those. I'm constantly looking and searching. He mentions NIL has given some of our players and players in general the capacity to get probably faster cars. Okay, whatever. All cars can go pretty fast. They can almost all go. They can almost all get to 90. I drove some jalopies back in the day, man. Anyway, thoughts on Kirby at least addressing this, probably trying to get out ahead of what's questions that are going to come next week at SEC Media Day.
I think there's very much an intention to do that. To me, you know, this is like, we've got something that's indefensible, but on the other hand over here, we've got something we think we can push back at, and that becomes the focus. The AJC is now irresponsible and unfair, and we're going after that, but we'll just kind of casually, not casually, but incidentally mentioned that, yeah, we haven't really controlled our vehicle issue, which to me is the bigger issue. You know, the one AJC story that dealt with the violence towards women, and if they feel like they can push back on that, go for it. To your point, that's the AJC, and that's an AJC versus Georgia issue, and we'll let that play out. But this is like, well, we're not going to talk about the car thing that's just been an absolute disaster, but look over here where the AJC's been unfair to us. You know, you're still ignoring or you're not properly addressing a major, major, fatal, tragic issue. And saying yeah, we're going to try to keep educating and intervening. Well, what have you been doing? And again, the internal discipline. What's the discipline? Whatever you're doing, it ain't working. And I don't think we should ignore that and just instead say, well, let's talk about the Atlanta Journal-Constitution here. So to me, that's the big ongoing issue that I don't see any answer. Convincing, compelling, publicly acknowledged discipline that's going to work or has worked with these guys.
Yeah, at some point, right, and we talked about this plenty before, but on the Georgia team, drag racing, right, became like the big thing. And it seems to be an epidemic of some sort, like within the team, that going fast in a car is cool and fun and everybody should do it. It's hard to obviously control 18, 19, 20 year olds, but there's a way to do it. It's done at a lot of other programs. And you don't see this stuff at some other programs. So I don't know what has to happen to get people there serious, in players too, you know, serious about not doing this. You had two people die. It's real concerning for sure.
Yeah, I mean, this was a pretty, if you're just looking at it as a exercise, and we rip these places for crisis management being poor, this wasn't bad. You always push back on the media, try to find something, you know, and you could have a series of stories and they try to find one thing and then they yank on that and say, look, it's not true.
Right. That's why you be careful about the facts and story, right?
Got to be careful. And I don't know whether the AJC was or wasn't. I'm not speaking another thing. But the truth is not a chain that you pull. And if one link breaks, the chain falls. It's a rope. And if one thread of the rope rips, the rope is still strong. Like, this rope's still there. They want to, anytime you're listening, I'll give you the definition, my definition of propaganda. And I'm not saying this is necessarily the wrong thing to do. This is how the world works. First, you say you didn't do it. Then you say everyone else is doing it. What about these guys? They're doing it. Mm-hmm. Then you say, well, even if we did it, it's not bad. It's actually great, or it's not a big deal. And then you say it's the media is just the media hates us, or the investigators hate us, and they just focused on us when they could be doing other bigger things. That's it. Four steps. Could be sports, could be anything in the world. You hear those four things, you listen to anybody in power and they're talking, go down those four things. That's what they're doing. And it's massively effective.
Yeah.
You can build empires off of that. We're just persecuted here, whatever. So I don't know what their AJC thing is. I just think we haven't figured out a punishment yet. How about throw one of these guys off the team? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe that does it. Something's got to give, because it's a time bomb where you're going to kill somebody who, it's bad enough of your players or one of your sports staffers died, but you're going to kill somebody else.
Yeah.
And, I continue to be, where the hell's the president? I get it. He's winning. He's beating Alabama. Okay. Like, this guy, they're not gods. They're football coaches. Somebody's got to stand up and say, enough. It ain't happening. Sorry. I'm sorry we're making an example of the 12th guy who gets a speeding ticket. And he might be a hell of a player. He might be a hell of a kid. He might be from a great family and just screws up. Next guy, gone.
Yeah.
I don't know, but this is not stopping, and to sit there and be like, I can't figure it out. This is a highly intelligent individual, Kirby Smart. He can figure out the most complex football things in the world. He can figure out how to beat Nick Saban in recruiting and all that. Figure this out. This one ain't too hard. Go ahead.
Well, one additional point there. While there may be a greater proliferation of nice cars after the NIL evolution, but I've been to Georgia many, many times. Yeah. There were a lot of Chargers and Challengers in possession of the football players before there was
players
an NIL
just got role. New cars. Yeah. New thing, SEC. Yeah.
Yeah, there was a lot of muscle in the parking lots there. A
lot of nice
just means more.
Just means more. All right. We're going to do this Rand Paul thing, but Rand Paul made some ridiculous comments. I don't even want to give him the time of day. Whatever. Rand Paul said, Rand Paul said something like, you know, it's just, they've screwed up college athletics because we can no longer be proud watching these guys. They used to not get paid. Now they get, you know what, honestly, yeah, let's do it. I want to get to Pat's gambling story, though. So whatever. Screw Rand Paul. This is my thing with Rand Paul. Rand Paul just spent like, remember every single one of these coaches and ADs went to Washington and lobbied all these politicians. And they met with the politicians and they trauma dumped how horrible their lives are as they keep getting raises and get more private jet time. This is what's coming out the other end. This is my thing with these commissioners, these ADs and these coaches. Stop dragging your sport. Yeah. Stop pretending you're suffering and you're the victim here because you get moron politicians to repeat it. I've never seen a sport try to kill itself in promotion more than this. Oh, my God. I can't enjoy it. This guy's making money. They used to say that about the Olympics. That's how there was their whole thing. No one will want to watch. Oh, yeah. Nobody liked Michael Phelps because he was also in a commercial. Nobody likes Simone Biles. Nobody, I mean, come on. The Dream Team. No, that wasn't popular. I don't want to watch Michael Jordan in the Olympics. Okay. These idiots. Anyway, I can't. I just can't. I'm not giving that guy time of day or any of these politicians are hearing what the sports people are telling them, though. They ain't meeting with me. Nobody, none of them will even, except our couple listeners. They're good.
You know what? First step, Tootsie. Second step, Wetzel on Capitol Hill. I want to see.
There you go. Boom. Come on up, Dan. Come pay a visit. No. Or come down, in your case, and pay a visit to the Hill.
You can't handle the truth. God. All right, Pat, give us the details. Okay, the Alabama, people remember the baseball scandal. The betting scandal. Alabama baseball coach gets fired due to this bet that goes down in Cincinnati on the LSU-Alabama game. There is a bet placed, an attempted bet placed at Great American Ballpark where there's a casino or a sports book downtown Cincinnati on this random LSU-Alabama regular season game because just before the game, they scratch the starting pitcher and put in a backup. And so someone tries to throw a ton of money on LSU. Pat did the reporting on this. This story is fantastic because we love idiot criminals.
Yeah.
What happened?
Given the fact that idiot criminals are part of our specialty on the pod, it was a joy reporting this. So, yeah, picture the scene here. Random Friday in late April. A guy comes to Great American Ballpark. You have to walk into the casino, the sports book, through a restaurant, the machine room, big red machine room. Get it? Ha, all right. So you walk through there, you get into the sports book. This is a place that doesn't do a huge handle or anything. And your guy comes up to the window and wants to place a bet or bets of more than, and keep those words in mind, more than $100,000 on a random college baseball game.
Checks out.
How do you think the staff reacts to that? Like, what? Excuse me? Pardon me? What? He's got the cash in hand. He's got the money with him. And he wants to bet more than $100,000, perhaps significantly more. We'll see when all the details come out. On Alabama against LSU. And they're like, well, you know, our limit's like $5,000 on a college baseball game.
Is it even that high?
I don't know for sure.
Because I remember this. FanDuel said they didn't get one bet on the game.
Right. Right.
Like the other books, like if you are a regular gambler and like known as a whale in Vegas, you're a sports gambler all the time and you come in and say, I'm betting $100,000. You got to be like Floyd Mayweather or that Mattress Mac guy in Houston or something like that.
Yeah.
They're going to be like, who are you? And I want to bet $100,000 on the Chiefs winning the Super Bowl. They're going to be like, all right, we're bringing out the manager.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So No, they are balking at the bets, and he's telling them he's got information on the game, which in and of itself is also like
he told the people at the book, I have inside information, correct?
Yeah, I've got information on this. It was put to me by one person who's familiar with this. Some people are really proud of their schemes.
Oh yeah, can help themselves.
Sources.
And as it so happened, he was communicating on the Signal app with his phone with Brad Bohannon, the Alabama baseball coach, at the time he is at the window trying to place the bet. So, of course, what do? They zoom in with the surveillance cameras, and you can read the text back and forth between them. I mean, it's astounding. Like, this is a great Florida man story who happens to be an Indiana man who happened to be betting in Cincinnati on an Alabama LSU baseball game.
Guy walks in with 100,000 plus in Cincinnati, tries to bet on a college baseball game that probably nobody else the entire day at that sports book bet on or even knows is happening.
Yeah.
The Reds aren't even there, so it's quiet. He says, I have inside information, and is texting the Alabama coach where the cameras can see it.
Yeah.
Now, I give a lot of credit to U.S. Integrity and all these these ways they can ref. Like, it didn't take Scooby-Doo to solve this one, man.
No.
Yeah. Right. As we have said on the pod, you know, the amount of data and surveillance that can be tracked on bets is one of the reasons why legalized gambling has been a positive. But this did not take extraordinary measures to catch. And, well, the other thing, too, once that's tripwired, our guy, Bert Neff, had a couple of his gambling associates back in Indiana trying to make large bets on the same game at casinos there. And so, now it's a two-state multi-pronged effort that got blown up, and the Indiana Gaming Commission's on that, although they return no phone calls, emails, or even in-person visits, as a matter of fact.
Pat.
No, this is a big thing that keeps on spooling, right? All right, University of Cincinnati fired some coaches. Xavier's now under investigation. Lord knows how many people Bert Neff knows and has somehow implicated, because he's a mover, he's a hustler, he's a shaker a little bit on recruiting circles. So he knows a lot of people in college baseball, and apparently some of them like to gamble or don't mind knowing who else does.
This just reeks of serious desperation in some way. Like, it reeks of somebody's in the hole. That's what it reeks of.
Yeah.
And somebody needs to make some quick cash, because it's an astounding story that somebody would have the gall to walk up to a book and while on the phone with a coach and then reveal that they have inside information on a game they're trying to place six figures on. Just incredible.
No chill to the guy.
Yeah.
Nobody.
No.
I once knew a guy who he robbed a bank. And he took a cab.
Wait a minute. I once knew a guy who robbed
a
bank.
Well, I still know him. I still know him.
Okay.
Just forget that part. He took a cab to the bank, told it to wait in the lobby outside, went in, robbed the bank, left, got in the cab, and drove away. It took like 5 minutes for the car. The getaway car was a cab.
A cab.
So obviously, I don't know whether the bank got like, hey, it's a yellow taxi, and they just call yellow. Hey, did anyone drop anyone off at the bank? Yeah. Where'd you drop them off after that? 1633 Elm Street. Okay. Thank you. No plan at all. This guy had no plan.
I think they thought it was a master plan because they had guys at other casinos in Indy. Right?
I would think if a guy comes in saying all that, I'm like, this is a TikTok, one of those TikTok like influencer pranks. Like, what happens if I pretend to do this? Don't do that, because they're not going to take it. They're not going to be like, ha ha, thanks for the joke.
Yeah.
You're going to trigger some auto 20 years auto feds. Like, feds love 20 year sentence.
Can't imagine. Did he not know the law? Did this guy not know the law? I mean, like,
hey,
you
I got
imagine,
inside info here.
Yeah, I got like, I can imagine like Patsy, like the teller being like, I'm sorry, you have inside information on the game. Yeah, right here on my phone. Oh, okay. Well, give me one
I'm
second.
Talking
hold
to the
on.
Coach, but it's on Signal. They'll never get it. Signal. Signal says it's encrypted. Okay, sure it is.
I can just see the teller too, like calling the manager. Yeah, we have a guy here who says he has inside information on a game and wants to place a $100,000 bet. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, be right down. Hold on. Let me alert the authorities. Yeah.
Tell them to fill out some forms here. We'll be right
down. Yeah, here you go. Let's get a picture of him, too, while we're at it.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Amazing.
I'm sorry, but I have to circle back.
No, we're not getting into the bank robber. We'll do that another time.
I know a guy who robbed a bank.
I got it. This pod's gone on long enough. We'll do the bank robber another time.
I wanted to know, like, who was in Brad Bohannon's phone contact list from a gambling standpoint. I want to know how many robbers you have in your phone contact list.
Not many.
Okay.
It's probably the only one.
Okay. Oh, my goodness.
He has turned his life around. He's an excellent member of society.
Good.
Helps children learn chess. He's a good guy.
Really?
Good
guy. Okay.
Just made a mistake. He was desperate. I mean, you know, not good, though. I mean, don't use a cab in a bank. It just seems like stuff at like 8, you'd be like, okay, all right, how would I rob a bank? This would, right? All right. We'll do a bank story some other time. We got to get this and then get out of here. And then we'll see everyone in Nashville, if you live in Nashville. Pat, I think you would love the stories. This is why I took this story here for you.
Okay.
So 1973, the great Mike Royko, Chicago, longtime Chicago news columnist. He was at the Sun-Times, he was at the Tribune, maybe some others, syndicated around the country. Maybe the greatest city columnist of all time.
Right.
Absolutely hysterical, but also just pointed, just would hammer like Mayor Daley in Chicago and just incredible. Back when, you know, everyone read the paper, this was the guy. He'd write every single day for like 6 days a week and then would often go out and get go out partying and go out to the bars at night. He hung out in the Billy Goat Tavern a long time, which is pretty famous in Chicago, right down just below where the Sun-Times and Tribune used to be. They make the hamburgers, all that. Great, great place. They got all his columns on the wall. When I was briefly a Chicago Tribune employee, I would, surprise, surprise, go down there to channel my Mike Royko. Didn't work, but good bar. It's in the base. It's like under the L. It's
right. Oh, yeah.
No light ever.
Been there.
Anyway, he wrote a column 50 years ago and set up this thing. He declared that America's beer tastes as if it's brewed through a horse. Royko wrote. Yes. So he set up a thing where he brought 11 friends to a bar and called it Royko's beer test. And this is what people wrote about in the 1970s. This is why the papers were way better. A city columnist now would never write this. They're so he's like, oh, I think America beer sucks, and people yelled at him. So then he said, all right, so he got 11 friends, 22 samples of beer, and he was trying to say whose beer was better, and they had like a blind taste test, like the old Pepsi challenge. And sure enough, the lowest rated beers were Schlitz and Budweiser. This is 1973. This is the thing. So the crew at the Old Town Ale House, 219 North Ave, where Royko was a regular, and I don't know if he did it there or not. I don't think he did it at that place. They are resurrecting the Royko Beer Challenge beer test for the 50th anniversary, July 30th from 1 to 3. 11 craft brew experts and enthusiasts, and love the term enthusiasts. Royko's son Sam will convene, and they will rate 11 local and national lagers decide how far the industry has come in 50 years, because the Chicago breweries now are everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, you turn around in Chicago, there's a brewery every corner. And they're claiming that now American beer is better than the foreign beers. And it's interesting. One of the reasons the American beers, I guess, were so bad back in the day, if you want to call them bad. I mean, I've never turned down a nice cold Schlitz, but I understand. is all of the small breweries went under during Prohibition. Mm. See, government regulation took out the small guy.
Yep.
And so all the bigger breweries dominated post-Prohibition, and by the 70s, nobody was going on. So that's the theory. So they're going to have a beer taste test. Pat, your thoughts on this? You are, you know, will the America rise up now that we have all these craft breweries?
Well, that's where's my invitation? Well, I guess it was lost in the mail. I should be there for this event. This blessed event.
July 30th, 1 o'clock, North Avenue. Get up, get your ass there. I don't know.
I would love to partake. I mean, there is no doubt American beer is light years ahead of where it was then. I mean, there was almost nothing but macro brews. I can tell you, we came across a beer in the early 1980s called Henry Weinhard's Private Reserve from Oregon. And it was like, whoa, this actually has taste. And it was awesome, and it wasn't even that expensive, but it was still more expensive than the Olympia, Hams, and Coors that we usually drank. And ever since then, I mean, look, my life has changed. And then I came across Sierra Nevada in 1992, and then I entered a committed relationship with Sierra Nevada. but, like, we are living in a golden age of American beer. We're probably actually over the top. There's a little too much of it, and some of it's not that good. But it is a golden age of American beer, and I'm glad they're going to celebrate it in Chicago in late July. And if the schedule prevails, I'll be there. I'm going.
Will really? They have out hard seltzer?
No, it's a beer.
I just wanted to see Dan's reaction.
No.
Get a little White Claw, maybe some Truly Berry.
Oh boy!
It's so sweet. I will say this: the High Noons, and there's noon, another one with gin now.
Mm.
I don't like.
Well, there's the new Cutwater. There's the canned cocktails, Cutwater, and they're not
there's
bad.
There's a gin one that's not that bad. And if you're on the golf course, it doesn't fill you up as much. But no, this is a beer thing. America versus the rest of the world. I'm saying America's going to kick their ass.
Yeah.
What?
No, we
you
can
had
do
the
it
Belgian
now, yes.
beer? No way, well, huh?
Belgium's the one place it can hang. I mean,
what are you, communist?
Know,
what are you, communist?
Come on. Hey, I went to
I'm on the side of America.
I
like that these places are brewing lagers and stuff. It's not that was my problem with the craft beer. They got too fancy. It's like, well, there's wood chunks in here, and there's you know, like,
wood chunks.
And the alcohol. It's at 14. You know, dude, I had half a beer. I couldn't. I mean,
Chimay, made in Belgium, is still maybe my favorite beer in the world.
Yes,
but
yes,
American beer. Other than Belgium, I think American beer hangs very well.
German and Belgian beer, I think I would probably take over American beer. But you're right, American craft brewery has come a long, long way. Even just in the last like 15 years, it's pretty incredible.
Well, go America, July 30th. This is a great thing. Bringing back Royco. We need a Royco. I think these newspapers would do better if they hired people like Royco to write columns.
I agree. And that's, you know, when you have to write 6 days a week, you come up with things like, I'm taking some buddies down to the bar to taste test beer.
Oh, he wrote one about this guy. It's on the wall of the, and I know the show's gone long, but it's on the wall of the Billy Goat, where his buddy Sam was the owner of the Billy Goat. And I think either he or his brother brought the goat to the Cubs game. That was the goat.
Right.
The curse.
Yeah.
And the curse was the Cubs wouldn't let him in with his goat. He brought his goat around as a promotional tool about the bar, the Billy Goat. And then the Cubs wouldn't let him into Wrigley Field. And then somehow the Cubs got a curse for not letting a goat in. Like, what? It's never made any sense. Might just be the Cubs were mismanaged for 100 years, Maybe. Not the goat. But whatever. They blame the goat. And there was on the wall, and the Sam, the bartender, claimed that this guy sat there and did like two shots an hour for like 12 hours or something like that. And so they tried to figure out whether you could actually drink that much. And the literal title of the story, I think, is just called The Super Drunk. Okay. And then, and Royko called like some alcohol expert somewhere, and the guy's like, the guy would have died. And Royko goes, well, he probably did, but he's too drunk to know it. Like, that was the end of the call. I can't even do this thing justice. It's the one of the funniest things you ever, I can imagine being a, like, newspapers are so boring now. Like, imagine, you know, it's like 1980 and you get your son, your Chicago Tribune, and you're getting your Wheaties, and Ryko's talking about the super drunk, and you're just laughing your ass off. Like, yeah, I'm renewing this subscription.
Hell yeah, of course. This guy's fantastic. 15 cents a day.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Like, absolutely, I'm reading this. Can you imagine everyone just laughing? And it's like, yeah, that's, I mean, so he would just write columns like that. Stuff that happened around town. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Huh? Mike Royko. Anyway, the Royko beer test is back, and Pat's vowing to go. So let's do it.
We'll start at Tootsie's, and we're just going to ramp up the rest of July.
The beer challenge? No beer challenge at Tootsie's? I don't know. Give us your best Nashville beer. I really thought of that as a beer town, but I'm sure.
Yazoo City makes a pretty good beer down there. There's others.
Pat's gonna be in the gutter at the end of this night.
I hope not.
Hope we see you there. If you're in Nashville, everyone welcome. Tootsie's, 7 o'clock Monday. We'll tape a pod Monday too. Plus, we got SEC. We got a lot going on. Huggins may quit or not quit again. Anything could happen. Continue to subscribe. We appreciate you. Excited media days are getting here. Big 12 starting too. We're going to get the season popping. We will talk to you later.